This is, how do you feel about eternal life? It starts with a coffee. A bandum not fic featuring members of the Academy Is and the Jonas Brothers. Written and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 for off-screen violence, stalking, obsessive behaviors, and murder. Herring is Mike Carden, Kevin Jonas. Reader's notes after the fic. So here's the thing. There's basically two kinds of really terrifying vampires. There's the kind that look terrifying, with mouths full of non-orthodontian teeth, and basements full of slavering gore all over the place, and you know to fear them. And the kind that look harmless, innocuous even, and then tear your throat out while torturing your family members because you didn't know to fear them and invited one over for Sunday family dinner. Kevin Jonas was that second kind of vampire. Mike runs into Kevin at a coffee shop one Thursday in November. This is a universe with Joss Whedon's vampire rules. They can be awake during the day, can even move around the sewers or subway tunnels, just don't stick them in sunlight or flambé! But maybe they're more like college students, groggy in the mornings, not at their full capacity till sundown. No freaky mind powers like in Anita Blake, and no glitter penis. Well, maybe some glitter, but only because Kevin likes sparkly things. He's like a magpie like that. Just off the Rutgers campus. Because the Joe Bros are from Jersey, and it gets dark quick in November. And also, I want to make a joke about the Chinese restaurant that's off campus that kind of smells like it serves dog in the sweet and sour chicken. How would you tell? The meat is all battered up. And also about how maybe Kevin was munching on the local pets as a snack one time? Or something. There is some flirting, with Mike taking the more aggressive, pursuing stance. Things like innuendo and Kevin hiding his face in his mug. Bashful. Shy. Coy eyelashes. And Mike possibly encroaching on personal space. Mike mentions his band playing at the open mic night in the student union. He assumes Kevin is a Rutgers student like he is, because Kevin looks like he could be anywhere from 16 to 22. We know he's actually around 90 years old. Turn of the century, baby! And his backstory is interesting, obviously. He was turned at the tender age of 19 by one of the scare-your-pants-off-with-my-face vampires, who was also cunning and conniving. Maybe it was the master? No, the master was stuck in his church at the turn of the century. Well, Kevin got jumped or mugged in an alleyway in the city one night by a scary vampire who knew that innocent baby deer was a look that would draw in the prey and make his protege both well-fed and also dangerous. Anonymous scary vampire teaches Kevin things like how not to make a mess of his shirt when he eats and how to torture people for fun. Both physically and psychologically, because that was not a skill set human Kevin had possessed. And how to look coyly up through one's eyelashes. Eventually, a non-vamp is killed in a power struggle with another scary vampire, and Kevin is left to his own devices. He hones his craft, makes a bit of a reputation for himself in the right circles, and travels up and down the East Coast for a dozen years. He has adventures and eats a lot of tasty people, but mostly manages to keep off the radar of the human authorities. One thing his sire taught Kevin was that you don't shit in the kitchen. If Kevin's feeling like a rampaging death spree one night, he knows to stage it not where he lives. That's just bad business sense. He even has a fake ID. And invites him to come see them play next week. There is no exchange of numbers, but there are meaningful looks. Cut to next week. The Academy is playing for open mic night. Kevin in the back of the auditorium, looking wallflowery. Mike's hot, etc., and maybe Bill does some wink-wink nudge-nudge when he sees Mike leering. More longing glances, more Mike doing the pursuing, lots of leading questions asked by Kevin. However, Mike thinks he's the one leading this seduction, thinks he is trying to coax Kevin out of his straight boy shell, and so is not suspicious. But we know better. Mike sees Kevin around campus some at the end of his school day over the next few days. At the coffee shop again, on one of the paths leading to the econ buildings, heading out of the dining hall. There are some smile and wave moments that totally disguise how Kevin is actually stalking him. Then Mike gets a phone call from his mom on Friday. His dog died. It was mauled. The scariest thing, really. What kind of animal could do that? Animal control is patrolling the area. Cue dog in Chinese food joke by a foot in mouth Siska. Cut to creepy, creepy Kevin eating homeless people in Central Park, plotting shit. Lots of vague, dark, insinuating prose. Not so many bloody details. We know Kevin actually ate Mike's dog, kind of how Angel killed Willow's fish, but Mike doesn't. What's Kevin's plan for Mike? Why hasn't he just eaten him already? Well, for one, Kevin hasn't been properly courted since he was human, and while being a vampire has freed him from many of the social mores of his era, for example, it's hard to believe in an all-knowing and benevolent god when you're a creature of the night. Though, for Nick, it was the other way around. Nick got even more religious after Kevin turned him, going on about how hell was real and that he was being punished for his mortal sins. So, even though Kevin had wanted to keep his brother alive and well with him for all eternity, Nick was so distraught at his situation that Kevin mercy-staked him. He didn't try to turn Joe. It's hard to think of just about anything as verboten or taboo when you've been bumped up to the spot of apex predator. There's just no reason to fear anymore if you're top dog. And so sex, with kinky toys, with multiple partners, with boys, is no longer the enemy. Well, certain traditions and habits have remained with him. That's why Mike caught his eye. Mike wasn't trying to prove Kevin inferior. Vampire-on-vampire relationships tend to be all about the posturing and the hierarchy and the fighting for dominance. Vampire-on-human relationships, for Kevin at least, have previously been all about the sucking. Give him a blowjob, and then the femoral artery is right there, you know? Kevin is a vampire. He's the boss here. And manners like that would have ended up with Mike developing an extreme case of exsanguination. But rather, Mike considered him valuable. Cherishable, even. Kevin maybe wants to keep him around, just for that. Cut to Mike taking Kevin out on dates. Mike thinking he's leading things along at a taking-things-slow pace. Kevin stalking Mike and leaving him presents. Drawings of him sleeping, random objects moved or doors opened or shirts missing when Mike knows he didn't do it. A la Angel and Drew. But Mike being none the wiser that it's Kevin. Maybe he mentions it to Kevin one night about how it's starting to freak him out some. Is it an ex? Kevin grrrs at the thought, subaudibly, because he is a possessive bastard. Is it a creepy fan of Bill's? Bill is Mike's roommate in a school-owned, off-campus dorm. Because Rutgers owns the building, it's public property and not a personal residence. Despite the many residents, they're transient, and so cannot set up a home barrier. So Kevin can get in. And Kevin suggests Mike come over to snuggle one evening, to feel better. Dun, dun, dun. Kevin's been thinking about it for a while now. But when Mike comes over that night, and doesn't even ask where Kevin keeps the condoms, just tries to snuggle on the couch while they watch one of the music video channels on TV. Yes, Kevin does have a Snuggie. It's a blanket with sleeves! Just because Kevin no longer has a functioning circulatory system doesn't mean he enjoys being cold. He resolves to keep Mike around, breathing, for a while longer. He changes his mind about turning Mike right then, and goes to kill Bill while Mike's sleeping in Kevin's bed, to further psych Mike out. Because Mike would be so distraught, and he'd lean on Kevin in his grief, and Kevin would keep saying that he's so glad Mike wasn't there that night of the home invasion. Wasn't it a good thing that Mike wasn't there when the crazy stalker fan broke into the dorm and cut Bill open? Because, sure, yeah, they were a shitty college band that couldn't get a paying gig. But they were a shitty college band with a Facebook page and a lead singer with glorious hair. Hair like Bill's develops a following. And that Tom Conrad guy from the campus library's printing room had always seemed a little too intent on Bill's computer history for Mike's comfort. Obviously, Mike doesn't know it, but Kevin staged the murder-suicide, like how Angel staged Jenny's death, to place all the blame on creepy Tom. Maybe because of his possessive bastard tendencies? Wipe out all possible distractions vying for Mike's attention? Also, this way Mike starts to think the whole thing's over with Tom's death. Mike thinks the stalking will end. Little does he know. And then, even though Rutgers has that rumored dead roommate equals straight A's for the surviving roommate policy, Mike starts talking about switching schools. He just can't stay at Rutgers anymore, Kev. You get that, right? You're so great, Kev. But Bill's been my best friend since we were in preschool, and going to Rutgers together was our dream. And I can't keep walking around campus crying every time I pass a boxwood planter, or the ice hockey rink, or see a copy of the school paper, or smell fucking shawarma. And Kevin? He lets Mike think that they can make it long distance. Mike's thinking about moving all the way to Chicago, going to the University of Illinois, because he thinks the climate's similar, but there's enough distance for a fresh start. He lets Mike stay in Kevin's bed while the cops are studying the crime scene. And he helps Mike pack his things. And he even promises to help Mike fill out the paperwork to transfer all his credits. But secretly, Kevin is plotting. And the night before Mike has to leave for his admissions interview in Chicago, the night he tells Kevin that things might actually start to be the very beginning of a new future for him, one without constant fear, and one where he learns to cope with the loss of his dog and his best friend. That's the night that Kevin turns him. The thing about vampires like Kevin, the thing that makes them so fucking scary, is that they have to make a connection first. They can't just bite you and be done with it, no. They draw you in, make you trust them, make you think you're safe as houses in their embrace. And then, when you rely on them, believe in them, give them a key to the apartment, that's when they rip your fucking throat out. The end. Ish. Okay, fine. Maybe there's something more eventually with biting and porn and eating Mike's surviving family members. No promises, though. Reader's notes. So last night I couldn't sleep, and I was poking around at the Anon Lovefest com, because nothing puts me to sleep faster than poorly written porn. I don't know, whatever, it's a thing. And I found this prompt, and the prompt was, Mike meets the totally adorable and slightly faily Kevin one night and falls head over heels. Little does he know that Kevin is part of the extremely powerful Jonas clan of vampires. And, okay, I get that it's an Anon meme and you're not gonna find, you know, sterling quality fic at every turn, but the story that someone had written for the prompt, well, it wasn't what I wanted at all. It was kind of bad. And then, okay, so it's like 1:30 in the morning and I'm supposed to be trying to sleep. And all of a sudden I've got text edit open and I'm like, words everywhere. And then this happened. And then it was 2:30 in the morning and I was like, oh, fuck it, get this away from me. And I spammed Quintensi's inbox and I was like, here, take this, do go away. And then she was like, star eyes, hearts, glee. Wait, make it creepy Tom Conrad. So I just changed that real quick. And because even though I enjoy delayed gratification, I also have terrible impulse control. I, podficked it. The title for this fic comes from an exchange between Drusilla and Xander in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. It's the one where Xander gets Amy to cast a love spell that makes the entire town of Sunnydale fall in love with him. And he gets cornered by Drusilla, and she goes, how do you feel about eternal life? And Xander panics and goes, we couldn't just start with the coffee? And I'm a kind of a large and intense Buffy fan. I think most of my fandoms can be crossed with Buffy. So it only seemed appropriate to use a Buffy quote about Drew for this fic, when it was kind of a reenactment of the Angel and Drew story with Kevin and Mike. You got that, right? Like, you got the Angel and Drew vibe? Okay, I'm assuming you did, because it's... Oh, fuck, I've been rambling for like 2 minutes. Okay, thanks for listening. Have a nice day. Bye.